Welcome back to the MicroComp Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Walling. In this episode, we dive into the dark side of venture capital. Is too much money bad? This is audio from one of our most popular YouTube videos where I dive in to the pitfalls that you might run into if you try to raise venture capital. And I'm not totally pro bootstrapping. I'm not anti-venture capital. Venture capital is a tool that should be used at certain times. And really the trouble we have in the startup space is that we've all been brainwashed into thinking that venture capital is the only way to start a startup. And it's not. Probably 1% of startups should raise venture, about 90% should bootstrap, and about 9% should raise some type of funding, maybe angel funding. Maybe you go to tinyseed.com/apply and you apply to our accelerator the next time applications are open. There's no one way to do this. And in this video, I talk about some of the cons of raising venture capital. But before we dive in, I want to let you know, late September of this year, I'm going to be in Istanbul, Turkey for MicroConf Europe. We're going to have a handful of amazing talks. We're going to have amazing excursions and, of course, our world-class hallway track. Speakers so far include Michelle Hansen, the founder of Geocodio and the author of Deploy Empathy, Mark Thomas, the founder of Positive Human, James Mooring, the founder of Astalti, and of course, yours truly. MicroConf.com/Europe if you want to buy your ticket. Tickets are as inexpensive as they will ever be. If you want to get a ticket and don't want to miss the event because the event will sell out, we've sold out all the MicroConfs for the past couple years, you should go to MicroConf.com/Europe and pick up your ticket for our event in Istanbul. And if you're interested in seeing some of the amazing visuals that my team put together, you should head to microconf.com/YouTube or click the link in the show notes to watch the video. And with that, let's dive into the meat of the episode. What if money meant to fuel your startup's growth actually ended up destroying it? In this video, I'm pulling back the curtain on the dark side of venture capital that most founders never see until it's too late. I'm Rob Walling. I've started 6 companies, written 5 books on entrepreneurship, and invested in more than 200 startups. The first thing I want to talk about is the allure of venture capital. I feel like it's pretty easy to see why folks are drawn to raising big buckets of money. They create big headlines. When you say millions or tens of millions in funding have been raised, it makes it sound like it's going to be easy to find success, right? With that much money in the bank, how can you fail? It sounds amazing. Examples like Dropbox and Uber, OpenAI, even The Social Network, if you've seen that movie about Facebook, that movie and others like it not only dramatize, but they glorify the raising of funding as if raising funding was the end goal in itself. Funding is just a tool, just a way to help you maybe get there faster or maybe help you implode faster. So it's interesting that in our society, getting investment feels like instant validation of your idea, like someone has anointed you. Some people act like it's the finish line, but it's not, right? It's a new starting line. Now the goalpost is set even further down the field, and you have to start running faster and faster, or else you can't raise that next round of funding. And you hear the stories of what founders sacrifice in pursuit of these outsized success stories. Some founders sacrifice their personal lives, their relationships. They sacrifice their health by not working out, sacrifice their reputations by doing things that are unethical or even illegal, as we saw with Theranos, and one could argue with WeWork. So as we talk about the dark side of venture capital, one reason that exists is because there are misaligned incentives. Because venture capitalists, the way they've designed it, they only make money with $1 billion or $10 billion outcomes. But a founder, if they were to sell their company for $10, $20, $30 million, they would have generational wealth. And so these incentives between the venture investors and the founders are sorely misaligned. It didn't used to be the case that in order to be a venture capitalist, you could only go after unicorns or decacorns, but that has become the game over the past 20, 30 years. So if you're a founder that wants sustainable long-term success or that wants to be able to sell, again, when you can sell for $10, $20, $30 million, that doesn't make sense for venture capitalists. It doesn't fit their model. If you want to raise venture, you're aiming after explosive growth versus a lasting stability, and that can lead to conflict with your investors. Another reason there's misalignment is that venture capitalists have a portfolio approach. So they might make 10 or 50 investments a year, stocking up dozens or hundreds of investments, and they really just need one or two to have that outsized return, the billion or $10 billion or $50 billion outcome. Whereas you as a founder, you have one company at a time. And in your life, you might have 3, 4, 5 true shots at bat to grow an amazing company. So all of that stacked up creates a misalignment between founders and venture capitalists. Another part of the dark side of VC is the pressure to grow at all costs. Since venture investors are going for outsized returns, your growth metrics become king and queen. Profitability and founder well-being frequently, if not in all cases, take a back seat. And the laundry list of venture-backed companies that could potentially have actually worked at scale, but imploded because they raised so much money and they raised it at high valuations and they overvalued growth, the list is kind of endless, but WeWork comes to mind, HQ Trivia, Vine, Periscope. You can do a Google search and kind of see the boneyard of companies that feasibly could have been successful had they raised smaller amounts of money or potentially bootstrapped. Obviously, there are companies like WeWork that would have been almost impossible to bootstrap, but realize they didn't need to force the inorganic and really ambitious growth that they did. Another dark side of venture capital, the third one, if you're counting, is the loss of control and autonomy. So once you accept venture money, you often have to surrender partial control of your vision. You have to give up board seats. Investors have influence. Oftentimes they can override a sale if you want to sell for a small amount. They have liquidity preferences where they get the first X dollars that come out of the company. And frankly, there's a lot of oversight that can be both good and bad. Now, I think oversight of a company can be healthy, but we do hear these stories of it being a bit too much. And if we look at the story of Bench Accounting, which recently had basically shut down and then was sold for parts, as much as we can tell, we see this tweet from Ian Crosby. I'm very sad today to see that Bench has shut down. I've avoided speaking publicly about Bench since just over 3 years ago when I was fired from the company I co-founded. I still don't have a lot of appetite to talk about it, to be honest, but I think at least a short statement is appropriate. And he basically goes on to talk about how he was forced out as the founder. Now, this doesn't happen to everyone. And oftentimes the board is acting in what they think is their best interest. And it's kind of hard to peel apart and say, you know, who is really right. I tend to want to trust the founder, but I have seen CEOs forced out that probably should have been. So there is this balancing act. Realistically, though, when you raise a lot of venture, you definitely lose control and autonomy. Another reason venture can be challenging is that you're constantly trying to raise that next round about every 18 months. And a venture capitalist injects cash and then they want you to burn through that cash and grow. And if you hit those growth milestones, raise in another 18 months so they get their markups. But if you don't hit those milestones, you're going to have what's called down rounds, where if you raise at an over-optimistic valuation, which most venture is when you raise it, it can lead to these painful rounds where the valuation is lower. So founders often wind up in these cases with a fraction of the company they built. You get diluted. And, you know, if a founder is working full time 60, 70, 80 hours a week and they own 10, 12% of their company, you know, at what point is this not worth it? And the fifth dark side of venture capital are the exit pressures. So venture capitalists typically expect an exit, an IPO or an acquisition within a set time frame. And this exit mindset can force decisions that don't align with the founder's long-term goals or the company ethos. Here's the thing, I'm not anti-venture capital. I actually think venture is a great tool for high growth startups. I just think the narrative that every tech company, every startup everywhere should only go raise venture funding and that they can't really do anything until they get permission from someone with the money is idiotic. Venture capital is a tool, just like a hammer or just like a shovel. And if you choose the right tool for the right job and you know what you're getting into, it can be a good tool for the job. But realize there are not one, but two other alternatives. You can completely bootstrap, which is what I did for my first five companies, or you can raise indie funding, alternative funding, whatever we want to call it. This is funding from an alternative source that doesn't expect venture returns. So let's talk about bootstrapping real quick. Obviously, the pros of bootstrapping are that you maintain full control. You can have slower initial growth, and basically you run the entire show. You don't have any oversight, but it also is kind of doing it on hard mode. I've raised funding for one of my companies, and I bootstrapped five of them, and I can absolutely say that the one I raised for has been a much easier, much more enjoyable ride, just because I have so many more resources with which to hire and with which to just make bets so I can move faster. I often say in your personal life, money can save you hours because you can hire someone to mow your lawn or shovel your snow, pick up a dry cleaning, do your grocery shopping. You have just a little more money and can save some hours. But in your business, money saves you years. And the more money you have in the bank, if you know how to use it, it can help you get there faster. So I have a rule, I call it Rob's 1-9-90 rule, where I say, I think about 1% of tech companies should chase venture capital. I think about 90% should bootstrap, and 9% should consider alternative types of funding. Now, these numbers, not exact. This is like the 80-20 rule, where it's directionally correct. And I think, once again, about 1% should chase VC, 90% should bootstrap, and 9% should consider raising some type of alternative funding. And there are many different types of alternative funding available, one of which is Tiny Seed. It's the startup accelerator that I run for SaaS companies. Other options include revenue-based financing. There are other alternative VCs like indie.vc. But talking about Tiny Seed, our goal is to give you the right amount of capital, the perfect amount of mentorship and advice without the loss of control, and an incredible world-class community of ambitious SaaS founders. We don't put pressure on you to IPO, and we have a year-long program for ambitious bootstrap SaaS founders to learn how to grow their startup faster. As I said, in your personal life, money can save you hours, and in your business, money can save you years. You can head to tinyseed.com/program to learn more about Tiny Seed and sign up to be notified when applications open again. And if you're watching this and you're an investor, you can check out tinyseed.com/memo for our full thesis. Or if you are interested in investing, head to tinyseed.com/invest.